birthday party?
Miracle. There you go.
Welcome to the Abracadam Podcast. I'm your host, stand-up comedy magician Danny Whitson. Like always, Abracadamets, I say it every episode, but I absolutely mean it. I hope you're getting stuff done, son. Setting those goals and meeting them. Definitely. Last week, I was super busy. I was on the road all over the place. Some fantastic shows, Huntsville, Birmingham, Zanies in Nashville. Fantastic. Great time. Thank you guys for coming out. It was a blast. But this week, I'm at home, not doing much, trying not to be a fat blob of shit, but that's not working out too well. No. I have, though, I did this. This is really cool. I was a guest on some really cool podcasts, so I'll give a shout-out to them real quick. Big shout-out to Rashawn Parker, his podcast, Beyond the Check. Rashawn is a cook, and he's also got a television show on Amazon Prime where he travels around and checks out some awesome restaurants. So if you got Prime, definitely check out that show. It's very well made, and they talk about some delicious food. But that was a blast doing his podcast. And then I was on Dreamscapes podcast, The Dream Wizard, Benjamin the Dream Wizard. Benjamin is he interprets dreams. He is a psychologist with 20 years experience, and he had me on his show, and I told him my crazy dreams, and he broke it down for me, which was really cool. He's really good at what he does. Check out his show on YouTube, Dreamscapes. Definitely worth it. Benjamin the Dream Wizard. And then this one hasn't aired yet, but I just did this last night. Super good time with Annette Smith, Music Junkies. And literally, we talked for an hour about our playlists, our favorite songs, and just how awesome music is. Really fun time. So thank you guys for having me on. And if you're listening, be sure to check out their podcasts, because those are some really cool podcasts to check out. With that being said, though, also, got some show dates I want to give a shout out to real quick. Do got a show Monday for Halloween. I mean, not Halloween, but Valentine's Day. That's what that one sold out. But that's going to be in Market Square, Knoxville. If you want to come peep in the window, feel free. That's going to be a damn good time. Then Tuesday, though, I'm really excited to be a part of this. Tuesday, I'm going to be at Harpoon Harry's. It's all proceeds go for the Alzheimer's, raising money for Alzheimer's. And we've got a show. You can check that out. You know, I guess Harpoon Harry's website will have it listed. I'm going to be there, but come check out a show there at 6 o'clock, and all proceeds go to a fantastic cause. Now, with that being said, let's give a big shout out to the sponsor for today's episode. Okay. Well, today's episode is brought to you by Rosie Tattoos. Custom tattoos designed to suit your style in a friendly and clean environment. I've been getting my tattoos done by Rosie for a while now, and I couldn't recommend anyone else because she does excellent work. As a matter of fact, I got an appointment to see Rosie here in just a few weeks, and I cannot wait to get my ink therapy done, baby. Rosie gets free consultations by Facebook Messenger, Instagram, or by email. Shoot her an email at rosietattoos@yahoo.com. Give Rosie a call today at 865-281-3451. Or go see Rosie at 5710 Kingston Pike, Knoxville, Tennessee. Get your ink therapy done. You know you want a tattoo. Go see Rosie Tattoos. All right, Abracadamets. Now, today's guest is somebody who I've known for a long time. As a matter of fact, he was at my very first open mic in Knoxville, Tennessee at the old Side Splitters Comedy Club. I think that may have been, that was one of his earlier ones too. So we've kind of been at this close to the same time. Very funny guy, and he's been funny from day one, and he's got a very unique style of joke telling. You'll hear me talk about in the episode that his jokes are stupid smart. It is stupid smart, punny, good stuff. Every time I watch him tell a joke, I crack up laughing, even his post on Facebook. So if you will, Abracadamets, sit back and relax and enjoy my fun conversation with stand-up comedian Tyler Gooch. All right, I'm excited. We got stand-up comedian Tyler Gooch here today on the Abracadam Podcast. How you doing, Tyler?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
It has been a while, man. Long time no see. I have known you for years and years and years. Matter of fact, my very first open mic, you were there. So I have known you forever now. But if you don't mind, will you go ahead and introduce yourself to the Abracadam listeners?
Yeah, I am Tyler Gooch, like you said, a stand-up comedian. I started off in Kentucky, and we knew each other through stand-up gigs in Tennessee. And then 4 years ago, I moved out here to Southern California, and I'm doing it out here now.
Dude, that's, first of all, man, what took you out to South Cali, man?
My wife got a job out here, and so we moved out to get for her to do her job. And then we're just south of LA, so I can get up there and do stuff. Do stand-up gigs up there. So it worked out pretty well.
Super badass. And I could tell you got this, tan look to you now, man. You're not so Kentucky safety anymore.
No, it's January. It's 70 degrees outside. So that'll happen.
You know, okay. So the wife took the job and, you know, just like the story goes, okay, I got to quote this man because he is a legend in magic and he's a legend of street performing. And he said these words. He's been on the podcast before, by the way. But what he said holds true for especially for comics and magicians. He said, if you want to be a full-time pro or a successful magician or comedian, make sure your spouse has a good job. So,
yeah, she's a doctor. So I did that.
God, the sky's the limit for you then, Gooch.
Exactly. So I checked the first box.
That's awesome, man. Okay, well, for the listeners who may not be familiar with Tyler's top of comedy, he is a pun master and a one-liner master. And some of the funniest stuff you've ever heard. First of all, I literally busted out laughing at the DoorDashians, by the way. That was so freaking funny.
Thank you.
But anyways, well, let's hear it. Let's hear this. What? Okay, I remember, you know, that first open mic, meeting you there. But what got you into comedy? What got you to choose the style of jokes that you tell also?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up watching the show Seinfeld on TV, and I thought that seemed like a pretty good job just doing comedy every night. And so when I was in high school, I actually did a senior project where you had to spend the whole year researching something. And then you did a presentation at the end of the year, and that was your whole grade for the class. And so I researched stand-up comedy as my senior project. So I spent a whole year basically doing nothing but pretending to be working, which was actually a really good preparation for a career in comedy, acting like you're doing a lot of stuff and not really doing anything. And then at the end of the year, I was supposed to give a presentation. And I realized 2 nights before that I didn't have anything to present because I'd just been like reading or like watching stand-up comedy and reading a Seinfeld book that I had. So I had written down some jokes that I thought of. And I snuck into the auditorium. The janitor let me in the auditorium a couple nights before. And I turned on a spotlight and I told all my jokes and recorded them on a camera. And then I downloaded a Steve Martin CD and cut the laugh tracks out of the Steve Martin CD and put them into my stand-up comedy video. So it sounded like I was getting the laughs. And then I showed that video as my presentation at the end of the year and got an A+ on it. They thought I had actually put on a show at the school that they just hadn't heard about. They're like, it sounds like you had a pretty good crowd at the show. I was like, yeah, well, it was not bad, you know. And so ever since then, I knew that I wanted to do after I graduated high school, I didn't actually do stand up after that project for years. And then the first time I did stand up for real, I lived in Lexington, Kentucky, and I drove down to Knoxville to the Side Splitters Comedy Club because I wanted to make sure if it didn't go well, that I wouldn't know anybody there. If I just bombed, I could walk away and be like, well, that never happened. I'll never see those people again. Nobody has to ever know this happened.
Oh, that's hilarious. I'm impressed that you literally edited, you put your own laugh track on your video.
Yeah, I had iMovie and I had always known how to make I'd done like some videos for class projects and stuff before. I taught myself how to video edit, and so I put that together the night before the project was due and turned that in.
That is hilarious, man. So wait a minute, so you went down to Knoxville the night that we met, was that your first time?
I think I had done it a few times before then.
Okay.
But yeah, there were some people that I met and I was like, wow, these guys are real professional comedians. And then I saw them there the next time. I was like, oh, okay, we're all just the same people.
We're just a bunch of scrubs. Well,
none of us have any idea what we're doing.
That first night, I remember getting there and I remember it was so packed because some girl had like a birthday and she invited her entire family. And Bridget let us go in the main room. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
The main room. And I thought every open mic was like that. I was like, this is the greatest thing ever. You know, and then I show up.
There's 100 people at every show. They all love you. They're excited to be there.
You show up 2 weeks later and it's you, three guys, and that fan blowing.
Yeah.
You know, yeah,
if the bartender has to run the blender, nobody can hear what you're saying.
Oh man, dude, it's crazy how fast that has just flown by. When you look back at that, you're just like, man, that's nuts, man. How fast
this goes.
So now you're in LA. So how's the scene out there, man? You hitting a lot of stages out there?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this happened where you are. We did have a pandemic.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I don't know if you guys had that where you were.
What
happened out here?
What is a pandemic? What?
But so stuff keeps, it opens up and closes down. And so you get a run of shows where you've got a bunch of stuff and it all gets canceled for a month, and then it all comes back. But I found that my style of short comedy works pretty well out here because there's a lot more comedians, so the sets are a lot shorter. Most of the shows are 10 people doing 10 minutes instead of in the Midwest, it's a host doing 10 minutes, a feature doing 25 to 30 minutes, and a headliner doing an hour. So if you tell really long stories, it's a lot harder to do out here versus if you just tell a bunch of 30-second puns.
I'd say that's probably one of the advantages with your style of comedy. Because I mean, it really doesn't even matter how long you've been doing. Sometimes you still always have to, there's those clubs that want you to kind of come down and do our showcase.
You know, exactly.
8 minute set. And for my type of show, it's difficult. I mean, I can go up and do just stand up in 8 minutes, but that's not really portraying what my actual show is. So
right.
It's difficult for me to portray my show in 8 minutes, you know, or something.
Yeah. Like that.
But for you, you could go up there, boom, boom, boom. And I mean, you could kill them in 8 minutes and you could douse them down with what you do.
Yeah. I do my first joke in like 30 seconds and everyone's like, okay, I kind of get what this guy is about. It's not, it's much less elaborate than having to set up like, okay, I'm a magician that does comedy that does like has all these other parts of all these facets to my performing.
The cool thing about what you do too is like, I mean, I think your style of comedy, Tyler, is probably one of the most difficult styles of stand-up comedy. And a lot of people will say like, oh, it's puns or it's one-liners. But in order to do that well, it is very difficult. That's why you don't, you know, you had the Mitch Hedberg and the Stephen Wrights, but you don't have a long list of those type of comics, you know?
Right.
And the thing that you do, the magic that you capture with your jokes is they're smart dumb. You know what I mean? They're dumb jokes, but you got to be intelligent to know what the hell he's talking about, to really laugh at the joke. You know what I mean?
I always tell people, you think that it's like a line and like, this is the dumbest joke you've ever heard. And this is the smartest joke you've ever heard, but it's actually more of a circle. And I like to work right at the, where you're not, this could be the smartest. This could be the stupidest. You're not 100% sure which way.
That is so accurate, dude. Seriously. I mean, there's a few of your jokes that, I mean, I always enjoy and I laugh at, but the one you posted the other day with the DoorDashian, I was just like, oh God, that is so stupid and so funny and so clever. And so clever. So, you know, I was like, that was good, man. Mm.
Yeah. One of the things I found is when you're doing shorter jokes, especially over a longer set, the crowd will start to figure out kind of what your formula is. And some of the people will start trying to guess what your punchline is. So like you were saying, you have to, when you're doing these short jokes, you've got to really work to disguise the punchline, and the setup has to make sense, but it has to also not give away the punchline. You have to kind of lead people over here so that you can surprise them when you come back here instead of leading them right to the punchline.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was thinking this the other day, and, you know, like sometimes, okay, I always live by the saying that some shows are fun and some shows are work. And the shows that are work, you know, I'm up there working my ass off and, you know, the crowd is making you work. And then afterwards they'll come up, oh, we enjoyed your show. And you're like, well, damn, you had me fooled, you know. But, you know, when people say, I don't know, what's your opinion on this? This is an interesting thing to think about is, of course, the worst thing a comic can do is hop up on stage and, you know, and shout profanities at the audience because he's bombing or because he sucks. That's, you know, sometimes people early in comedy do that. But there is something to it that the majority of the time it is the audience. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think it's the reason a lot of people, I think, yell at the crowd is because it's when you're up there, you're by yourself and it does feel like the audience is attacking you. You feel like you're being attacked by, like, so you go into defense mode. A lot of times it is like the audience is just not responding, and for whatever, it can be any number of reasons. But I had a guy tell me early on, one of the guys that ran an open mic was like, don't go up there and yell, like, don't yell at these people about the crowd being mad, because these are the ones that showed up. Like, you can't convince them to be good all of a sudden. The best you can do is just try a couple of different styles of jokes or try different things, try some crowd work. If they're not into that, go back to your playing material. Just work with the crowd you're given. You can't change them once you're already up there.
Absolutely. And that's how, you know, I don't try to change them. I go up and this is what we're working with. And this is what, you know, I'm going to have to work, you know. I mean, we all want that fun crowd, you know, we all want that fun audience that you're just like, oh man, this is a party. We're having a good time. But sometimes, like I said, sometimes it's work, sometimes it's fun. But I was just thinking that I was like, you know, I mean, because really you could take one of the greatest comics in the entire world and put him in front of an audience that's just not having it, then it doesn't matter, you know?
Yeah. And I think the more you do it, the more you learn. There is a little bit of trying to figure out what the audience likes. And so if the audience likes doing crowd work, I'm going to do a little more of that. If they like just not talking to them and doing my show, I'm going to do a little bit more of that. But there's also, you eventually learn that, like, I am what I am, right? Like, I can't go up there and be like, these people don't like my jokes, I'm going to tell a really long story, right? Like, that's just not who I am. So I have to, one of the things you eventually learn how to do is, like, I'm just going to go up there, and if they don't like it, they don't like it. They won't come to see me next time. But hopefully the people, if there are a couple people out there that do like it, they'll come back.
Exactly. That's how I am. I'm like, dude, this is what I do. I hope you like magic. I hope you like
it. Right.
Because if you don't.
Right. But that's like, I come on stage, I've got like posters that have graphs on them and stuff. And so I bring those on stage and people, like, sometimes I can tell, like, this is not a math crowd. This is not a crowd that is, but I can't not do, like, I've clearly brought a bunch of posters on stage. I can't just not do those now, right? I can't pick my posters back up and walk off stage. Everyone's like, what is that guy? I just have like a security blanket. He's got a bunch of posters he carries around for no reason. So there. And so I assume it's like that with you, with like, you brought some of your stuff up to do your magic. You can't just not do it.
Absolutely. I'm obligated, man. When they see the magic, I have to do it regardless. I'm obligated. You know, I had a, this happened to me probably about a month ago. I was doing a trick, and literally, okay, this had never happened before. And I've been doing this long enough to where it, like, a magician, if he screws up a trick, he's always got an out. You know, there's always an out, something that you can do. So I had this guy up on stage, and the trick didn't work. And I thought, holy crap, I can't believe this didn't work, you know? And I'm thinking, oh my God. And I'm like, okay, well, I've got it out. So I do my out and it doesn't work either, which has never happened in 25 years, you know? So now the only thing I can do now at this point is I just start making fun of myself. You know, I'm making fun of myself, joking about it, blah, 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 you know? And, you know, I do some crowd work, the guy off stage, you know, act like it's his fault. And but they're laughing. And here's the thing, throughout the whole show, the only thing I could do is do callbacks back to that screw up. Yeah. And then at the end of the show, people came up to me and they was like, "We really thought you screwed that up. That was so good." You know? And to this day, Tyler, I have no clue, brother, where that card went. I was like, maybe I'll find it a few years. But I mean, yeah, and you know, I was like, God, I'm obligated now. I can't just, okay, let's just not do that one. You know right. what I mean? So, but yeah, I mean, that's the crazy thing is, you know, luckily it was a fun audience too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And but, I think they can sense, like, if you panic, the audience can sense that something's gone wrong. If you're able to stay like, oh, okay, this is what was supposed, like, this is all part of the show, then a lot of times people won't realize that you weren't supposed to lose the card.
Exactly. I swear, to this day, I have no clue what happened, man. It was nuts. But yeah, I mean, yeah, if you panic, they're going to smell that fear, and then it just, you know, it can get weird. But I don't know.
Like, I've also, over the years, I've developed a lot of like throwaway lines, because maybe I shouldn't tell this on myself, but I jokes don't work a lot for me. So I've come up with a lot of lines I can use for when a joke doesn't work. So I feel like that's something you just eventually pick up as ways to deal with that, with something going wrong. Right.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, man. Normally if something, you know, like I said, if it goes wrong, there's usually always an out. I don't know what was going on that night. That was just weird. You know, I don't drink on stage or anything like that, or I don't know. It just happens, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, Lance Adams, right?
Yeah.
Lance was the feature that night. And I knew he was, I just looked in the corner and I knew he was back there dying, laughing. But he knew he had seen this trick 10,000 times. He knows what's happening. He knew I screwed this up.
You know, things are not going well when you get laughter from the other comedians. That's the sign that something's gone wrong in your show.
That's the worst, man. I was like,
they won't laugh at your material. They'll laugh at something going horribly wrong for you.
Exactly, man. And I'm not going to lie. I love that. I can't help it. I'm the same way, man. If you see when your buddy's up there and it doesn't hit, you're like, that's hilarious. You know,
that's what I don't know if you've had him on the podcast or if you're going, I don't want to steal his story, but I was in the audience watching Derek Zuashkiani.
I haven't had him on yet, but I've got plenty of Derek stories.
if he's on, he'll probably tell the same story, but he was doing crowd work on stage, and it was part of his murder mystery show. And I was in the crowd waiting for the stand-up show that started next. And he had a little kid on stage, and he asked the kid, who was clearly like sick. He asked the kid, "Hey, where do you go to school?" And the kid said, "I can't go to school. I have cancer." And like, the crowd is just silent, except for me, who is just like trying to contain myself as I watch Derek's eyes like, okay, what do we do here?
What did he say? What did he do?
Derek just goes, "Oh, okay." well, and like he handled it well. He just moved on to the next question, was able to talk his way out of it, and then like he got to know the kid afterwards and followed him through his whole the kid made a recovery and he followed him through his whole treatment. But just in that moment, there was nothing funnier to me than watching Derek's eyes like, uh-oh.
You know, Zoo does fantastic crowd work. And I think probably before he got all the practice there at that gig back in the day, but he does fantastic crowd work. You know, a crazy story. We had a little room we were doing here in town for a little while. The owner, I knew the owner very well. And he was like, "Hey man, let's do some stand-up comedy here." And I already looked and I was like, "God, I don't know, dude. You know, I don't know if this will work here." And I was like, "Look, it may work if you close off this part and such, and we'll try it." And he's like, "Okay, we'll do it." Well, the first night was Brent Tierney. Okay. I had Brent come down, which Brent is just a hell of a comic. You know, he's freaking fantastic. And Brent comes down and Brent immediately starts roasting this place. Okay. And it is absolutely hilarious. Everyone in the place is dying laughing except the owner. The owner's pissed, you know. So Brent does the show. Then, you know, "All right, man, thanks, you know." And the owner's like, "Yeah, but how about bringing a comic to start an asshole?" you know, and I was like, okay, all right, well, and next week we've got Janet Williams. She's going to be here, and I think she'll kill in this room because this is kind of roadhousey place, you know. And Janet comes down, and they give Janet a rough time. Literally, they gave her a rough time. I'd never seen Janet actually have like a rough set. You know what I'm saying? And yeah. It wasn't that great of it. It was definitely the crowd, not Janet. But they, you know, they were jerks, you know, and I was like, God, this kind of pisses me off, you know, because I love Janet to death. So at this point, I'm tired of this room. I'm like, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm over this. I don't want to do this crap, you know. So I had Derek booked and I called Derek and I said, look, man, I said, dude, I'll just be honest with you. I don't want to do this. This place sucks. You're not going to like this room. You're going to get up there and you're going to eat a bag of balls. You're going to hate it. Okay. But I said, I understand if you need the money, I totally get it, but this is going to suck. Derek's like, no, man, I'll come do it. Yeah, man, I'll come do it. Danny, yeah, I'll do it. I was like, all right, dude, you know. So Derek gets up there and now keep in mind, we had some, well, I don't even want to say this, that part. But anyways, Derek gets up there and kills this mofo. They freaking love him. And you know Derek's pretty looking face, and he's up there clean cutting this damn freaking tetanus shot of a bar, and he kills. He absolutely kills it. When everybody else went up there, and it was just, but yeah. So, but yeah, Derek, great, great comic, man. I definitely got to get him on here. I really do, man. Can't wait to get him on here. I'm trying to think. You all the way. You know, I've had some Kentucky comics. Had Joe Deuce on here, which was okay. Great time. I love Joe. It was funny story with Joe is after having him on the podcast, I was sitting at home and the TV was just playing, you know, and I wasn't even paying attention. I looked over, some court show was on, and I see Joe Deuce sitting in the audience.
I think they started filming a court show in Lexington, and I think he got free tickets to go.
I was like, what's Joe Deuce doing? I was messing. I was like, what are you doing, man? That's just crazy, dude. Are you doing any side gigs like that? Any acting or anything like that?
I was in like a sketch show a while back, but I don't feel like I'm a good. I don't feel like I'm a good actor. I don't. I think part of it's desire. Like I don't. Unless it's like a very very funny role, I don't. Like I don't want to be a dramatic actor or anything, and so I think that makes it hard to get into acting.
You don't think you can play the part of a shrink of a, you know, in the part of a role, maybe about a kid who is like, you know, a genius, but he's, you know, has a violent past or something like that. And you can be the shrink.
Probably not. No.
I don't know, Gooch. I could see it, brother. I could see it. I could see you pulling off the acting bug. Well, I mean, you're in South Cali. So what is the biggest difference for you but from Kentucky and South California?
Well, from like a comedy perspective, there is there's a lot of differences. From just a lifestyle perspective, if you're just talking my day-to-day life, mm-hmm. The biggest difference is when you're in Kentucky and Tennessee and everything, when you're on the highway and the speed limit is 65 miles an hour, most people drive between 70 and 75 miles an hour. And there's a pretty consistent flow to traffic. In Southern California, there are four lanes on the highway. If the speed limit's 65 miles an hour, there's one person doing 48 miles an hour. There's a person doing 93 miles an hour. And they can be in any lane at any time. You never, it's chaos on the highways all the time.
You know, my son just moved out to Las Vegas. And that was his biggest shock was just how much traffic, you know, it is different out there versus back home. You know, that's a big shock. yeah, I don't know too many LA comics. I don't know a lot. Now I am looking to come out your way to Magic Castle in Hollywood. I will be out there. I don't know if it'll be this year, you know, but all, you know, who knows anything, but I will be out that way. So I don't know how close you are to that, but if I do get out there, man, we need to hook up and grab some grub, or I need to try In-N-Out Burger. I know that.
Yeah, for sure.
Is it as good as they say?
Yeah, it's the only place that I was driving home from the Madhouse Comedy Club in San Diego at 12:45 at night. And I passed an In-N-Out Burger that had a line wrapped around the building in the drive-thru. It's the only place I've ever seen have a line around the building after midnight. And the same thing is true at 11:45 in the morning. Like any time of day that it's open, there's a line in the drive-through.
Man, dude, I gotta try it, dude. I definitely, that's gonna be one of the things that excite me. Can't wait to get out there and try some in and out. So, but with the pandemic though, you guys stay pretty safe. Did you know COVID made its rounds through our house? So, well, you know, we're all good now. But I mean,
yeah.
And luckily, we're all
we've been pretty fortunate. My wife got the vaccine stuff before anybody else. Like she was one of the first groups eligible working in the hospital and everything. And then I switched to doing online comedy for a lot of the pandemic while even when stuff started to open back up before it would close back down again. My style of comedy was pretty well suited to online comedy because my jokes are very short and people's attention span, like there's a lot to get distracted by when you're looking at your computer.
There is.
So I feel like that was a benefit that I had over more successful longer form stand-up comedians.
I did some of the Zoom open mics. Remember Dat?
Yeah.
He literally texted me. I was like, "Hey Danny, you want to do my Zoom open mic?" You know, and I was like, "Okay, Dat Fan from Last Comic Standing, Dat Fan." Okay. But anyways, I did it. I did a few of them and it was kind of odd because they was like for real deal open micers, like been doing comedy 10 minute open micers to people who've been doing it forever. But my thing was I wanted to, you know how a joke, you have to voice it. You just, instead of keeping it on the paper on your head, you feel like you got to say it out loud a few times.
Yeah.
So even though it was pretty much basically just like an open mic because they were just comics forced to stay there because you had to stay too. You couldn't leave after your set, you know? So you had to sit there and unmute and listen, you know? But I did a few of those. And then virtual shows became a thing for magicians. You know, magicians are like, "Oh, well, I got this X9578 BC camera you got to get." And then they've created their entire show. And now virtual magic shows became a thing. So I had to make one of those.
I was going to say, it's hard for you to get a volunteer from the audience on the Zoom show.
It is. So what you had to do, it's basically all mentalism is what it is. It's basically all, I tried to put a touch of my real show into the virtual show though. One gag, like I'm going to say this because I'm not doing much virtual anymore, but in my real show, I throw a hammer at somebody and, so I was like, well, I want to try to do the same thing on virtually. So I did this corporate show and I pull the balloon out and I'm like, okay. And I pop the balloon and now it's a hammer. And because I'm talking about my live show when I'm doing this, well, then it slips out of my hand and it hits the screen and it cracks the screen. And so in the corporate, they're all freaking, "Oh my God, what has happened?" And I'm like freaking out and panicking. And then I remove the piece of tape off of the lens, you know, and I'm like, I was trying to find ways to make a virtual show fun, even though, but you know what, did you get this? Like, I mean, it, some ways it was cool, but in some ways you just can't beat a live audience, man. You know what I mean? That energy.
Yeah, there were, by the end of it, there were only like two shows I would still say yes to doing. I did a couple where it was just like you were talking to nobody, either everybody would be on mute, or like one time I was watching and I did a joke and I could see the host get up and walk off screen. And I was like, all right, well, am I in charge of this now? I just walked the host from his own show.
But,
I mean, there were a couple, the ones that I still did was like, and I still do periodically. The social distancing social club, I think is what it's called. It happens a couple days a week now, but they have an audience that comes every day, like a recurring built-in audience, and they all know the rules. They know, they keep their cameras on, their microphones on, but they don't talk over the performers. They just like, it's there. They've got a very well oiled system. That the issue is it's the same people every time. So I have to keep a list of what jokes I did before and do new ones. But yeah, there were a couple of them that were well run and I still do those, but some of them, yeah, it was just, like you were, I was talking to a picture of myself on my computer. I'm like, what am I doing? I can just do this in my bathroom.
Have you seen the virtual reality comedy club thing? I saw somebody had posted like a thing on Facebook, like they're doing like virtual comedy club now.
Yeah, I think the same people that run that social distancing social club own the Nowhere Comedy Club, and they've got people that do it virtually, longer sets like that. But they've also got a location in LA set up that's just a room with a bunch of screens that's got all the audience members on it, and you've got a stage and a microphone, and so it tries to create that same. I haven't actually performed on their stage in LA. I'd like to do that sometime, but they're trying to recreate that feeling of a live audience.
So do you think, though, like the metaverse, like Mark Zuckerberg's thing, do you think the future of performing arts in general, live entertainment, is going to be like that?
I think there's definitely some element of it going forward. Just like the virtual shows continue to exist for people that, like, when I lived in Lexington, there were comedians that would come to Comedy Off Broadway there, but there were a bunch of comedians that I would never be able to see that I can see on that do some of these virtual shows. And so you get to know a wider swath of comedians. And I think that's not going away, because it's a good way to market to people you wouldn't normally be able to reach. But I don't think it's going to replace in-person entertainment. I think it'll just happen in addition to.
I hope not. I mean, I try to, like, the virtual shows aren't going anywhere, and they are now actually, the virtual shows have become another option for corporate, you know. So if they, instead of flying you to this other city, well, let's just, we'll do a virtual show and have them virtually. And a lot of magicians I know have put together some great virtual shows. They really have. They've been clever and figured out a way to do some really clever stuff. I think stand-up comedy is still a little more difficult, but there's like, I don't know if you're familiar with Lauren Ansley with Barely Funny. During the whole heat of the pandemic, she was killing it with virtual comedy shows. She was producing them and booking comics left and right, and you know, people were digging it. So I don't know. I mean, when I look at the meta thing with the virtual reality stuff, and I was talking about this the other day, there's some people, I mean, they say it's definitely the future. But I hope it doesn't replace live entertainment. You know, I really do, because one of the downfalls when it comes to, I think, virtual reality or virtual performing is the scariest thing about what we do is the first time you do it is getting up there and doing it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think virtual reality creates a false sense of security for doing things. Like, I'm terrified of heights, but I would much rather do it virtually, you know, climb a giant tower virtually. Right. You know what I mean? I can do it now. I'm a paratrooper now. I did it virtually.
Yeah.
So I wonder, do you think maybe 10, 20 years from now, people will be like, yeah, I'm a stand-up comic, but I'm only virtual shows?
I think there'll probably be some people that do that, but I think there is just something about like being in the same room with the performer, because I know the crowd that watches all the virtual shows, when the comedians from those shows perform in their city, they go out and they watch the live show too, because they take their, like, they want to get their picture with this person that they've just known through the computer. So I think there's that element of just being in the same room as the, like, I go up to the Comedy Store occasionally, and we'll just sit in there, and nice. They let comics sit in the back if they've got empty spots, and so you just sit in there, and there's just something about, like, I can watch this guy's Netflix special and it may be a lot of the same jokes, but there's something about being there and like getting the specific timing. And like, if somebody drops a glass over here, you see them drop the glass, then when they address it, like, it feels like you're connected in a way that you just can't recreate virtually, I don't think.
I guess it goes back to also, you know, with music, that you can now listen to any type of music anytime you want to, but people still want to attend concerts.
Right.
They still want to see that performer live. So that's a good point. Something definitely to, and I hope you're right, because that's the reason why I do this, is you know, for, you know, that energy of the audience, you know what I mean? That's what we're addicted to. And I just don't get that same feeling virtually versus a live crowd.
It seems to me like Magic would be even more, you'd want to attend it in person versus virtual. Cause you're people get tricked with camera tricks all the time, watching stuff on screens. It's when it happens right in front of your face that it's impressive.
Constantly. And it's because Magic is everywhere now. And it's all over the internet, and it's all over TV too, which is helpful. But at the same time, there's so many bedroom magicians or YouTube magicians that you can literally, I mean, yeah, you can get away with anything, you know, on the computer, you know.
Right.
I think we got a joke about that. It's just so, but versus whenever you're live and seeing somebody do it in person, it's still so much better. You know what I ran into a lot? Is I run into people pulling out their cell phones and videoing it live, which makes no sense to me because I'm like, you know, right. The show is so, you're here, dude. Put the phone down, man. Put the phone down. I don't understand that either, man. It's just, it's crazy. We live in the Black Mirror, bro.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some people that get really mad if they're like, that guy's going to tape my set and put it up on YouTube. My thought is always like, if they tape my set, they probably have more YouTube subscribers than I do. I don't have very many. So please, if you have more than 50 subscribers, tape my set, do whatever you want with it.
I've just got the point where I don't care. You know, I mean, they're going to do it. I mean, I every now and then people ask and I'm like, well, it's better if you put the phone down, but you do whatever the hell you do. I don't care. You know, you can't really do anything about it anyways. So it just is what it is. Are you a big TikToker? Are you on TikTok or anything like that?
No, I just recently figured out how to use Instagram. So I'm like a generation behind whatever. People tell me I should get on TikTok. And I've known, I know like three comedians at this point who have used social media to become huge stars. So you would think I would get better about it. But instead I've watched their success and been like, that's cool.
I mean, there's a person that I'm torn with now that she's a big deal on TikTok.
Yeah.
And she's got a million followers on TikTok and she's been doing comedy like a year and a half, you know, which, you know, I mean, so it just is what it is, you know, people, you know, but I don't know, dude, I've got the TikTok channel. I don't know. This is my opinion about TikTok. Okay. TikTok's kind of like porn. Because it's like, you know, there's so much
TikToks are you looking at?
Well, trust me, dude, you can scroll, you know, but I mean, no, really, because I mean, you look at it and you're like, you know, this is unoriginal. This is just people ripping other people off. This is just people are selling their souls for clicks and likes. This person was probably touched. You know, a lot like, you know, but at the same time you catch yourself watching it. You're like, I can't stop watching it. I shouldn't be watching this though, but I can't stop. So
I like the idea that you watch porn and you're like, this is unoriginal. Like, come on, think of a new position, people. Like this is derivative.
They totally ripped that off. That was they didn't come up with that. That's garbage. I don't know, man, but there's just something, I'm going to be honest, there's something gross about TikTok, man. It's just, it is a lot of people on there selling their souls for likes and views.
I feel like I wouldn't understand it at first and everyone would be like, who's this weird, this guy's way too old to be on TikTok. Like, go back to Twitter where you belong.
You would think so, but literally there's people of all ages. And then if you get on those TikTok lives, there's some chick with her breast pressed against the camera, you know, like she's, how are you guys doing? You know, and
all right, fine. I'll get on TikTok.
The convincer, but it's just, I don't know, man. It's just such a weird, weird time that we live in now. And it's crazy. I don't know where it's going, dude. You know, like we've lived through natural disasters, terrorist attacks, freaking now a pandemic. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at all, seriously, if an asteroid just slaps into us. I will not be shocked at all.
Right.
I mean, at this point, you're almost like, where's the plot twist? You know, something's got to happen.
Yeah. It's like porn. It's not original anymore.
Damn porn, asteroid porn. That's the future. The well, let's do this, man. Okay, because we've been chowing here for a minute. And I've known you for years, brother. So I know you got one. So every guest on the Abracadam podcast has to tell a hell gig story. Tyler Gooch, let's hear a hell gig story, brother.
So I feel like you'll appreciate this one. I've got several, but I picked this one because I feel like you'll appreciate it. I was asked to do the University of Kentucky, their student center had stand-up comedy. And so I got asked, like doing colleges, they asked me if I'd do the show. I said yes. And I went and I found out it wasn't a stand-up comedy show. They were doing a showcase so that the students would know all the types of entertainment that the student center offered. So they were going to have me do stand-up comedy. They were going to have a magician, and they had an Elvis impersonator. And we were all going to perform on a show.
A bad joke.
And so the show is about to start. The guy that's running it asks the magician if he's ready to go up first. And he says, no, I need to set up first. And so they said, okay, Tyler, you're going to go up first while the magician sets up. And so I go on stage, and there is 8 people in the crowd, and they're all trying to do a group project. So they're talking amongst themselves at a table, trying to get classwork done. And I'm yelling my jokes at them. And they did not have a backstage for the magician to do his setup. So he's just standing behind me, like putting his tricks together so everyone can see what's about to happen, because he's having to assemble all of his stuff in front of everyone behind me while I yell jokes at them. And there's 2 people from the student center committee that are sitting in the front, really trying to like laugh and be like, hey, isn't this thing that we were in charge of fun, even though we didn't get anyone to come, and this group is mad at us because they're trying to get their project done? And so I get done, the magician goes up, and he does better than I did, because he goes out into the crowd and talks to the people doing the group project and is able to do his tricks like to them. And then the Elvis impersonator gets up, and he's like a late in life Elvis after Elvis has put on some weight. And he is trying to do the songs, and his girlfriend is running the music, and she keeps playing the wrong track. And so he's yelling at his girlfriend, like, that's not the track I said. I said play this track. So like Elvis is very angry. He does a couple songs and gets off. And the guy comes up and he's like, okay, I need you to go back up and do 10 more minutes. And I was like, I'm not going back up there. I did my part. I got done. So he's like, no, we gotta fill the 2 hours, or else they don't give us release the money or whatever. So I go back up there, I do some time. The magician goes back up, and he's like, I can just do the same tricks again. So he does the same trick. So then Elvis is supposed to go back up, but in between sets, Elvis has taken off his belt to eat a bunch of chicken fingers, and he's eaten too many chicken fingers and can't get the belt back around him. So he is running on stage trying to snap his belt, but he's eaten too many chicken fingers, can't get it. So he just goes up there with no belt on, and which means he just got a white bodysuit, which without the belt breaking up in the middle is a very upsetting image. And he's back up there with his like playing air guitar, even though he's got a real guitar on his back. He puts the guitar behind him, plays air guitar, and is yelling at his girlfriend. And I think the guy's like, hey, you can have some extra chicken fingers to take home if you want, because I know this wasn't a good show. Thank you. That will make up for it.
Totally authentic Elvis. Definitely. That's awesome, dude. Definitely a hell gig. Definitely. God, the gigs we do. The gigs right. We do. That is funny. Well, let's do a thought-provoking question, Mr. Charlie Gooch, because you are an intelligent man. Okay. You are. And this is the thinker, something to think about. And I often think about this. I do. That's why I ask people this question. Given the times right now that we live in, okay, if you had the option to travel into the future or in the past, and you only get to make one trip, that means when you go, you can't come back. Which one would you choose, future or the past?
Well, I think, as you alluded to earlier, I think I would be a little bit concerned about going into the future because an asteroid could hit tomorrow. And like, it wouldn't be that surprising. And then I'm just the only guy left here. Like, whoops, I I went too far in the future. Everyone's gone now. So I maybe it says something about me. I think I would go to the past where I know what happens instead of going into the unknown. Maybe like I
now what year would you go to in the past?
See, that's a good. I thought about this. I think I've read like science fiction books where people go way into the past and they're like they predict eclipses to like the medieval people, and then the medieval people think they're like wizards or whatever. I think if I went too far in the past, I would be very unhelpful because I would know about all the cool things we have in the future, but I don't know how to make anything.
True.
So they would be like what? I would be like, yeah, we have cars. And they're like, how does that work? I'm like, I don't know. Like you put
gas. It's full of crap.
Right. Yeah. It's like, there's like something with pistons, but I don't really know. I'm like, oh, okay. What about, what other stuff? You're like, oh, we have. I'm like, I can tell you the ingredient. I can tell you like the active ingredient in the shampoo. I don't know how to make it. I just sometimes I forget to take my phone with me to the bathroom and I need something to read. Right. So I read the back of the shampoo. I can tell you the weird ingredients, but
yeah.
So I feel like I can't go too far back where we don't have things that I know about. So maybe I would just go like 20 years back. Okay.
20 years
early back. 2000s.
So early to. Like, okay, go at least maybe 21, do before, but go like 2000 or
yeah,
2002 still has kind of a crap year, I think.
Am I still my same age when I go back?
Yes.
Okay. So maybe I go back to like, well, I guess if I go back to like the 80s, then I could get in on the stand-up comedy boom of the 80s.
I think I would go back to the 80s, to be honest with you. There's a lot of cool stuff in the 80s that I would love to go back, even though, see, I was a child during the 80s. And in my opinion, I think that's the best time ever to be a kid was the 80s. But yeah, the stand-up comedy boom would have been great. I would have went back in the 80s and got a head start, would have, you know, got famous before Amazing Jonathan and been like the coolest comedy magician ever. So yeah. I think that's a good answer, bro. It is. Okay, here, this right here, Tyler Gooch, this is inspired by you. I'm going to show you as a magician. Okay, we're all required to make balloon animals. All right.
Okay.
And right. I only know one. So I'm going to show you the one I know. Okay, here. Hold on.
Okay.
Hold on 1 second. Here we go. Hold on. Here we go. Oh, shoot. It popped. Anyways, well, it was supposed to have been like a bird, but anyways, it popped. All right. There we go. A stupid, stupid sight gag that I know Tyler Gooch would appreciate. Now, but we're going to do the real deal. I'm going to read your mind, brother. Are you ready, okay, Tyler Gooch, for me to read your mind?
Yes.
Some magic. Here we go. All right. I, Danny Whitson, am going to attempt to get into the mind of Tyler Gooch, folks. Now, granted, I know you cannot see this miracle that is about to take place. So that's why Tyler is going to say that was amazing after I pull this stunt off. What I'm going to do, Tyler, is I'm going to show you some cards right here.
Okay.
I want you just to think of one of those cards. Just think of one of those cards. Don't screw this up. Just think of one. You got it?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Sometimes I do this and people think of they totally screw it up. So it's okay.
Take one that's not in there.
Yeah, let's do that, magic boy. Here we go. I'm going to lose the cards in the deck. All right. I'm going to try to do this. I'm going to try to cut the deck. So hold on. I'm going to say right here. Okay. Now I'm obligated, Tyler Gooch. I can't get out of this. I'm obligated. If I fail, I look like a complete buffoon. All right.
Right.
Thank God they can't see me and I can edit this too. So for the first time, Tyler Gooch, what was the card that you were only thinking of?
An eight of diamonds.
The eight of diamonds. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, non-binaries, one card only. I cut two. One card only. The eight of diamonds.
That was amazing.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. I sold my soul. People ask, it's like, how did you do that? And I'm like, I sold my soul, and they'll believe me. And I'm like, yeah, you know, Satan asked me if I wanted $1 million. I was like, nope, I want to do card tricks. And while you're at it, make me 5'6" and throw in some red hair. So
I'd like to be able to do card tricks on the internet. Thank you.
Virtual shows. Virtual shows. Dude, this has been a blast, man. I love talking to you, dude. Like I said, I've known you forever, and you're actually one of the few people who from back in the day who have stuck with comedy and stuck with the grind, man. I tell you what, well, before we get out of here, where can the listeners learn more about Tyler Gooch?
So you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, all those places, not TikTok, but as of right now, maybe in the future, at The Real Gucci is my handle there. And if you if you're interested in very short podcasts, I have a podcast called Crime and Punzishment, with an S on Punzishment. And episodes of that come out whenever I have time to record them. So they are very sporadic. And you never know when one's gonna happen, like a real crime.
Now, is that like every platform? Can we find that pretty much anywhere?
Yeah, I think it's on most of the platforms where you get podcasts. They are episodes are like 5 minutes long, so it's not a big time commitment. And they are it's a fake crime podcast. A lot of people do true crime. That's too much research for me, so I do fake crime. And we try to pack as many puns as we can into a 5 minute show.
Dude, I think that is awesome. A fake crime show. That is awesome. I would seriously listen to that. You hear that, guys and gals? If you listen to any podcasts, please check out the Fake Crime Podcast. And what did you say it was called again?
Crime and Punishment.
Crime Punishment. Okay, I got it. I'm going to check this out, and because it sounds hilarious. And if you know Tyler Gooch, I guarantee it's hilarious. And if you get a chance, definitely check out one of his shows. Brother, man, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. This has been a blast.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.
All right, that does it for that episode of the Abracadam Podcast. Guys, if you will, be sure to follow Tyler Gooch at The Real Gucci on Twitter. Check him out online. I know he's got some stuff on YouTube. You will definitely laugh your butt off. He's a very funny dude and a good friend. I've known him for years. Great guy. If you guys have not done so, like always, give us a subscribe, follow the Abracadam Podcast. Also, if you're on Instagram, give me a follow at Super Magic Boy on Instagram. I would love to love to see you on there. And like always, Abracadamits, thank you for listening.
You please stop drinking vodka at my kid's birthday party?